that song only means one thing. That means you're listening to the High Spot Podcast. You can catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Again, also on Brain Stew Radio Network on Twitter as well, at Brain Stew Radio. My tag team partner, Jeff, here with me. Jeff, SummerSlam weekend, it came and went, man. I'm still exhausted by it. So much stuff happened. We went to NXT. We went to SummerSlam. We went to the Raw afterwards. You know, you have to kind of say Brooklyn's been spoiled a little bit because...
By having us.
Yeah, by having us, the Jersey Wrecking Crew, which you can go on the WWE Network and see all of the Jersey Wrecking Crew. Just catch our, you know, our poster and our Twitter handle there. We definitely advertised ourselves, and you know, we hustled a little bit then, you know?
You got to, man. You want to take the show to the next level.
I'm sure we're going to have a couple of haters.
A couple of haters, but you know what? We did the show proud, man. We did what we had to do. We hustled. We did the post shows and stuff like that, so that is out there for you guys. It's available. You can find it on Twitter. It's posted on SoundCloud, and of course, we have the Facebook page, the High Spot Podcast, and also on Instagram. We will put all those great pictures that Brian, the great cameraman, took of that weekend. Again, very memorable. Lots of stuff happened that we've covered on the SummerSlam post show, and now Raw, SmackDown, I guess, didn't disappoint. You know, we saw Bayley, we saw AJ Styles become the number one contender for the World Heavyweight Championship, the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. So lots to talk about, man. And yes, we are still in a SummerSlam hangover. But Brian, you got to admit, it was good to get back to Jersey.
It was good to get back to Jersey. You know, I'm slurring my words because I'm still a little bit hungover from this. But again, like you said, it didn't really disappoint. It had a lot of, you know, sadness coming on Raw. Finn Balor had to relinquish the Universal title. We'll get into that a little bit later, obviously. And then SmackDown, like you said, it changed a little bit. They finally had a new set, and they had new action, which we hadn't seen before with AJ and Dolph Ziggler, like you mentioned in the main event. So it's just great to see AJ Styles get his up-and-comings like that, because he definitely deserves it. You know, has John Cena pass the torch? I guess we'll see as the weeks go by. But it's set. AJ Styles, Dean Ambrose, first pay-per-view for SmackDown will be Backlash on September 11th. And I can't wait to see that, because, you know, it'll be intriguing to see how the storyline plays out, because then AJ and Dean Ambrose will be one hell of a match. But also, let's not talk about something you mentioned to me, and I kind of brought up to you when I saw it. WWE's getting kind of innovative right now with what they're doing on the network, and not trying to do a free plug here, but the fact that they're doing something now where they do their own little version of a post show called Smack Talk, and a lot of interesting things happen there, where Jeff and I always talk about the unpredictability, which you want to have, especially on a live program show, and you got that, especially with that episode of Smack Talk, hosted by Renee Young and the general manager of SmackDown, Daniel Bryan.
Oh, you did, man, and what you got was a surprise attack by Carmella on Nikki Bella, and I think that it was a much-needed heel turn for Carmella, so we'll see what the princess from Staten Island will do with that. Looking forward to see that, because, you know what, she works better as a heel, and I think the pressure, you know, will kind of alleviate from Carmella, and I think she'll be able to do well in the role as the princess of Staten Island, because that gimmick calls for it to be a heel, so I think she'll do well.
But speaking of gimmick, that gimmick Nikki Bella has, I don't know if I can really cheer for her. I know she's come off a major neck injury, but how long does that wear out? I don't
see but she got cheered when she came back to SummerSlam. We'll see. She's a professional. She'll do a good job. But again, what you're alluding to, Brian, is, of course, we saw The Miz, and he was awesome. You know, and
one of the best promos I've ever heard.
And you know what? And that's where me and you were talking about it. You told me, because I really, you know, once SmackDown's over, the Smack Talk, I'll watch it if I can. But you were on point. You said, "Did you see The Miz?" And I was like, "No, what?" And you told me it was a heartfelt, emotional promo. It felt like a shoot to you. Daniel Bryan even walked off. And I was like, "I got to see this, man, because you don't really see this that often." And Smack Talk has become must see. And for the unpredictability, and seeing The Miz, seeing that heartfelt look into the camera and talking to the critics, because every promo has some realism to it, and that was pretty real. And you start to wonder, man, is this The Miz we're going to see from now on? Is he going to cut that Hollywood gimmick? Is he going to be more real? That's what we want to see. Don't let us down, WWE. You have a chance. You got everybody talking. Everybody's talking about it, you know? Everyone's talking about The Miz in a positive way the next day. Don't blow it. You got a chance here. Do something with it. Make him viable. Make the Intercontinental title important again. Make it work, WWE. You laid the groundwork. Let's do this. Let's get the ball rolling. Let's see The Miz, the real Miz.
Definitely. And the one thing that we can definitely say, I've gone on record to say, you know what, I sometimes, you know, harp on The Miz and like, oh, you know, the Miz TV is probably the worst show ever not to watch it at all and things of that nature. And I compliment Miz on his in-ring ability, how it's improved. Again, that was the focal point of what the discussion was or argument between Daniel Bryan and The Miz was. But this time, despite anything I feel, and Mick Foley mentioned it on his Facebook page, where The Miz right now, despite whatever happens between this and what the WWE decides to do, cannot be the butt of any more jokes. I finally saw for the first time the passion and authenticity that I've been waiting for the longest time, and I saw it with him, and now I look at Miz, despite whatever happens, in a different light now. I can never look at him the same way again, in a good way, though.
Yeah, and it won't be his fault because, to me, it'll be the WWE, whether they choose to, you know, either go in a positive way or not. So, to me, it's in the WWE's court where they want to go with this. To me, The Miz has always had this. To me, it's another example. If you let your wrestlers be real and you let them, maybe just let them be themselves, let them talk, let them have that organic feeling. Brian, I think since we've been working together, that word organic has been like a key word in this business that we're in, whether it's sports, whether it's entertainment, whether it's professional wrestling or anything like that, is that it's being organic and being real. And then the question is, like, Daniel Bryan, you know, what does he do after this? Does he become heelish and try to screw over The Miz? You know, what goes on? You have an opportunity, WWE, it's in your hands, and The Miz, you know, he slam dunked it for you. So now roll with it and let's blow this thing out of the park and let's make the Intercontinental title important.
You brought up a great point. What happens next? And a lot of people now will be tuning in to see what does happen next. But again, another thing, you know, SmackDown now finally has brought in their own now version of the tag team division. They have so much depth there. The WWE SmackDown titles were introduced. A tournament is going to be taking place, which will escalate all its way up to Backlash in a finals to see who will be crowned the new WWE SmackDown Tag Team Champions. And finally, the women have something to fight for. The WWE SmackDown Women's title now has been implemented on SmackDown Live, and we'll see in a six-pack challenge will happen at Backlash to crown a very first ever brand new WWE SmackDown Women's Champion. So a lot of things happening right now in the world of WWE, not just in WWE, but all professional wrestling, which, you know, I can't get enough. And I've mentioned to you time and time again, what a great time it is now to be a fan, because there's so much things to look at, not just WWE, all around the spectrum. New Japan, Lucha Underground, TNA, list goes on and on. NXT, which is a separate entity, and what a great NXT takeover it was. We were there. I was exhausted by the end of Shinsuke Nakamura's entrance, because the guy has it, Jeff.
What?
It.
It. You're right, he does.
You stupid idiot. Of course he has it, Jeff. He's
had
it for a long time.
You've been calling me that all weekend, and I'm getting pretty sick and tired of that. But you know what? Honestly, though, Shinsuke Nakamura has it. And let me tell you something. You heard from us. You heard us on the SummerSlam post. You know, you heard us on NXT Recap, a Hot Tag Edition. You heard from us, but now we want you to hear from a third opinion. We wanted to get, you know, somebody here that knows his wrestling. And I thought...
Oh, really knows his wrestling.
I thought that it'd be no better way than maybe get the guy that inspired us, actually, to get in this field, and that is John Canton of TJRWrestling.net, Raja.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at The John Report. Really knows his stuff. It's amazing. We haven't had him in like a year and a half, and it's good to get him on here again too, because this is the guy who writes his Raw deal. This is the guy that has his own podcast. This is the guy that knows the WWE inside and out, and to have him here and dissect such a huge weekend and talk about the last two Raw and SmackDowns is just great to have.
It was always great to have that third perspective, because you and I, we definitely have our different views on certain things. But again, with all the stuff that happened, the Brock Lesnar, we even forgot to mention the Brock Lesnar Randy Orton main event that ended SummerSlam and ended basically the whole weekend. What's going to happen here? So we had all those questions asked. The Universal title, Brock, AJ Styles, John Cena, you know, the night after Raw, what was going to happen with Finn Balor relinquishing the title? What happened on SmackDown? The Miz, Daniel Bryan, all these questions we wanted to get John's opinion on it, and what was a pretty much successful SummerSlam weekend, and we want to know his take on all the events that occurred, and this is what he had to say.
All right, we're sitting down here with Mr. John Canton. You know you made it big when you have your own wrestling shirt, and of course you can follow him Twitter at The John Report, John Canton from TJWrestling.net. on Raja.com, and also host of the TJR Wrestling Podcast, the TJR Wrestling Podcast. John Canton. John, it's been like a year and a half, man. I remember talking like before WrestleMania 31. Glad you can join us. How you been, man?
It's been that long. Well, yeah. I'm good, keeping busy. I remember talking to you guys before. I didn't realize it was a year and a half. That's crazy.
Lots to discuss here. First of all, wishing Vinnie Mac a happy 71st birthday. How crazy is that?
That guy will never die, and he doesn't look a day over. At least his body doesn't look a day over.
If I'm 71 years old and I'm working, 15-hour days like that guy, or probably more than that, no freaking way I'm doing that.
Even at our age, though, he works harder than we are. And you just said you just had 40, you just wrote 40,000 words in, four days, yeah. Right? And this guy's, working 15-hour days. You think sleeping is a weakness? So, I mean, we got to get our act together, bud, to catch up with Vince.
Maybe the three of us combined can equivalate one day of Vince's work.
Uh-huh.
I think it's an example of why there's no other wrestling company close to him, because there's no other Vince McMahon. We could say, with his birthday being 71 years old, I mean, we could reflect on his life a little bit, and it's like, he's the most important person in the history of the business, and I think that's easy to say, and just like, it's remarkable how efficient and everything he is, and I know people will think, oh, he should retire or whatever, but we don't know exactly what he does every single day. Like, he does, have final say in everything, but maybe he's delegating more to the number two, which is Triple H, and maybe he's delegating more to other people and stuff. So, there's only one Vince, there's only one guy that has that kind of success, right? Like, when Eric Bischoff had success, he also killed WCW with, he built WCW, he also killed them, whereas Vince is like, okay, he's had a waves in his career of ups and downs, but I mean, the company is very profitable, and they're producing so much content, like, it's ridiculous. You guys are, I know, in the shadows of Brooklyn, I guess you could say, and look at that, three straight sellouts, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable what they're doing, man. They've turned SummerSlam into WrestleMania during the summer. It's unbelievable, and it'll be back there next year as well. But John, what I really want to get to talk about right now is something that we've had a couple of lackluster SmackDowns, and the first SmackDown after SummerSlam kind of actually was really, really good, man, from AJ Styles and the Dolph Ziggler match. And we finally have a main event for Backlash with AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose. But all the talk is what happened afterwards. And, that talk and smack show has become must-see because it's becoming a little unpredictable, too. And what I'm talking about is The Miz. I've always said that if you let a talent go and you let them just, be real and don't script them, you can get magic like that. And to me, that was magic. It was awesome.
Yeah, for people that missed it, basically, like, him and Daniel Bryan basically questioned him as a worker, kind of said, you're not, known as a hard hitter kind of thing or whatever. And The Miz just fired back, and I thought it was tremendous. And there's people thinking, oh, it's real, Daniel Bryan didn't expect it, all this kind of stuff. And, it's part of a storyline in the sense that it was at the end of the show and Daniel Bryan walks off and The Miz ends it. Like, you want to end this show doing something memorable, right?
Yeah.
So you have The Miz doing this rant, and all of a sudden it doesn't feel like it's The Miz character that wears that stupid, coat thing that has a hood on it. I don't know what the hell it's called. But, it's more like the guy speaking to you as he's, ranting about things. And it just works because you don't see it very often, like you just said. Like, you don't see the silly promo that he does on TV, when my hand goes up, your mouth goes shut, that kind of stuff. And, all the catchphrases, and it just felt more natural and more real this time, and I really liked that aspect of it. And the fact that people are sitting around questioning what's real and what's a work, I mean, that's the kind of reactions you want, right?
That's definitely a factor that's been missing in WWE programming for a long time, that sense of unpredictability. And I've mentioned it to Jeff several times when I've written articles for Busted Open Nation doing the SmackDown Rewind. I've been talking about how it needs to be live. They finally moved it live, but they're still missing that ability, as we dealt with during the Monday Night Wars, right, where we didn't know what was going to happen, what was going to happen in the WWE side, what was going to happen on WCW side. But the thing I enjoyed most about it, and I want to get both of you guys' opinions on, is that for the first time ever, I looked at The Miz, and I saw the person Mike behind it. I saw the emotion behind those eyes, and a lot of it, it was probably a work, who knows, it felt more like a shoot. You felt real emotion, his frustrations, because I'm sure not only do we critique him in terms of, I always thought he's a good worker, but I never really enjoyed that character he played, The Miz. I couldn't really relate to it. We finally saw for the first time the true essence of what he is and his passion for it, and I think to me, it's going to be a question of what, where do they go from here now? You know, that's the big question, isn't it?
You want me to go first?
Or? Well, no, yeah, no, I think.
By the way, guys, I made such a great point that both you guys were completely enamored with.
What I think about it too is like you could say it's a shoot, but I think that when you make it look so real, it's written, but it looks real, and I think too, you know, there's a little bit behind.
It wasn't written. I don't think it was written. I think it's like here.
Here, talk
you
about this.
Say
right?
what you want. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but also too, the idea is that there is some emotion behind that because he hears the critics, he hears the people that talk about him. So part of it too is he's also speaking to the audience too, to the fan that doesn't like him too. There is some like truth behind what he's saying, you know?
Yeah, and I think there's truth to what Daniel Bryan is saying in the sense that the Miz is not at the level of. When you think of the best in-ring performers in the company right now, he's not at the level of AJ Styles, Sami Zayn, Cesaro, Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins. He's not at that level. People don't sit around saying, I'm really looking forward to this Miz match on the pay-per-view. There hasn't been that in a very long time. Maybe 5 years ago when he was kind of a hot performer, but his matches are very routine. Like, they're the same thing all the time kind of thing. He doesn't fly. He doesn't go off the top rope much. He doesn't take crazy risks, and that's fine. That's why he's had a long career, and he's 10 years, and he's 35, 36 years old. He's going to have another 5 good years if he wants, and you know, good for him. God bless him. But what Daniel Bryan says, you know, we feel like you're coasting over there. I don't know exactly the word he said, but. It's true in that sense.
Kind of like a coward kind of.
Yeah, he wrestles like a coward and basically talking because about how you mentioned his in-ring chops. Style.
Yeah, when he throws chops, you don't really think that they hurt. That's what he's basically saying. And he doesn't go all out and risk his... But at the same time, guys like that do that, no offense to Daniel Bryan, who I love. I mean, that's why he can't wrestle anymore. Because he was crazy in the sense that he would do headbutts and fly and land head first all the time when he had concussions in his past. So, you know, I love Daniel Bryan, but he should have probably toned it down a little bit at some point.
No, you're definitely right. I mean, it depends on what side you look at it. Both have a lot of truth behind it. And, you know, the great thing about it is that Daniel Bryan and The Miz do have some history since, you know, when NXT was first thought of and Daniel Bryan came and actually he was the protege of The Miz. And that was
everybody laughed.
And everybody laughed and he had no personality. And what ended up happening, he had basically more of a better career. Theoretically, a shorter run than The Miz that has right now because he's still currently wrestling. But again, there's always that great dynamic. The only downfall to this, guys, is the fact that there will be really no payoff because you love to see these two go at it again, but we both know it's never going to happen.
Yeah, you know, but John, I've been reading too, you know, I don't know the sources, whatever, but they're talking about how the WWE, where I read somewhere too, I think it was on Forbes article, how the WWE is not giving up on the idea that Daniel Bryan could still wrestle. I mean, do you think that's... like accurate, or do you think there's a chance that we see Daniel Bryan try to get in the ring again?
I think it seems unlikely just because there's so much risk there. Like, you can't tell a guy, okay, you're not going to retire, you're not going to wrestle again because of your concussions, and then maybe in 6 months or a year you're going to test him again and he's going to pass all of a sudden. I don't know how he's going to be able to pass a test in 6 months just because he hasn't taken a bump. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just... I'm sure that rumor is going to be out there for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Stone Cold, you know? Everyone thinks Stone Cold has one more match left in him.
Yeah.
And it's like in 2003 was his last match, and it's like Stone Cold's in his 50s, and it's like, oh, he's going to wrestle with Brock Lesnar.
Wait, you're telling me there is no one more match left in Stone Cold's
It'll be 2025, and we'll still be asking Stone Cold. So how about it, man, you know?
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. And it's funny. People ask him questions in interviews, and I'm just like, Anyway, but do you remember when, like, the Steve Austin and Paul Heyman thing on WWE Network happened?
Yeah.
And Austin did this huge promo about Lesnar, and everyone's like, Austin's coming back. And I actually bought it, to be honest, like, a little bit, because I'm like, why would he spend 3 minutes doing a promo on Brock Lesnar? And it was at the end of the show, just like this. So the guys know how to rile people up and get people talking. And that's what I think this is. And if it's me booking SmackDown next week, what you promote is, you promote this segment, and then you say The Miz is going to open the show with Daniel Bryan in the ring. And it's not going to be Miz TV. It's going to be The Miz and Daniel Bryan. Because Miz TV is people think of Miz TV as like a cartoony kind of thing, right?
It's just a fabrication of the highlight reel from Chris Jericho's version. So it's like, we've seen it before. I mean, John, you bring up a lot of great points. And, you know, for me, I would love to see it happen again and give Daniel Bryan one more shot. But if he came back for one more match, I don't know necessarily if I want to see it against The Miz. No offense to him. I know, yeah, I know. But I said, heaven forbid, like, we always hope that Stone Cold Steve Austin has that one more match left in him. Yeah. We'll probably keep still doing that until the cows come home. But, you know, speaking of the fact that, you know, talking about styles and how they increase, you know, Daniel Bryan's style increased him to have more likelihood of injuries and Miz's didn't. When you look at it now from the perspective of, you know, SummerSlam weekend came and went, and for the first time we had a first ever Universal Champion, Finn Balor, and what a great moment for him, not necessarily during the event itself, because a lot of people were kind of annoyed with the presentation of what the Universal title looked like.
Yeah.
Exactly. We'll get into that in a second. But how did you feel when you heard the news? And I'm sure you're probably like me and Jeff, we're hoping it wasn't true, that, you know, now Finn had to relinquish it after the night he won it, one day later, or less than a few hours later, had to relinquish it. How much does that hurt his momentum, you think, going forward? Or do you think when he comes back after recuperating from 4 to 6 months, he'll pick up right where he left off?
Yeah, I feel terrible for the guy, because when you think about it, like, how long was he in NXT for? Almost 2 full years, wasn't it? Like, yeah. Something like that. And he's 35 years old. He should have been WWE 10 years earlier, probably, really, right? Because he's always been a good performer. It just took a while. He was in Japan for a long time. And it's like he works that hard to get to that level. He's over huge. He's got the Demon King thing, which they say too many times, by the way. Demon King, Demon King. They said it so many times.
Sounds like Demon Kane, you know?
Yeah, I know. It annoyed me. And I mean, he had it written on his body, too. It's just like, okay, enough already. But that's Vince McMahon, I guess, driving the point home. But, yeah, when this spot happened and Seth Rollins does the powerbomb into the barricade, I saw right away because he stuck his arm above the barricade. And I think that's just a human instinct, right? You got to try to land. That's not an easy back bump, right? These guys are used to taking back bumps. They would rather probably fall off a 30-foot ladder and land on their back than take that bump, because at least – if you land a back bump, you're still gonna do something you've done hundreds of times, right? Whereas
yeah, exactly.
In this case, you don't have much control. There's no give. Like it's probably steel behind whatever is in the barricade. So, I mean,
the position of his arm too. It looks like he was trying to brace himself, which, like you said, is instinct, but probably wasn't the best thing for him to do.
He flung him too far. I think that's the issue.
Yeah,
Seth flung him too far. I mean, it's. Good, maybe good 4 or 5 feet. Like, he should have been closer to that. He like flung him in midair, and then of course you got to feel your way back, because I'm sure Finn thought, "Whoa, this is I might
yeah,
land
where is the wall." Yeah.
Yeah. So, but
and then the fact that, let's give him credit too, because the fact that he popped his own shoulder back in, like,
John, I'd be crying, dude.
And you, Sami Zayn did that last year with John Cena on Raw in Montreal last May. So, I mean, we've seen it happen a couple times in wrestling, and I'm sure there's been other people, and it's just, these guys are tough as hell. And, you know, you got Conor McGregor calling wrestlers all these bad names about how they're wimps and stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, these guys are the toughest dudes, and when you think about it, because they're putting their bodies on the line and all this kind of stuff. And I feel terrible for him. And I think Seth deserves some blame, to be honest, because
Do you think he needs to change his style as well?
Yeah, I mean, don't do the powerbomb and turnbuckle anymore. Like when he did it to Sting last year, and Sting, a lot of people will say, oh, he's 57 years old, he shouldn't be in the ring. Well, he still jammed his neck and you know, he's never going to wrestle again. And I mean, Finn Balor would not be injured if they didn't do that spot. So he didn't do the turnbuckle powerbomb on Raw. So maybe they told him not to do it anymore or something. So who knows? I don't think Seth's not a safe worker and stuff like that. But just in that sense, you got to be careful.
You think maybe 6 months leading up to, you know, WrestleMania, getting close to that, would be projected when he comes back? Do you think in terms of WWE, they'll probably pick up right where they left off, or is that something where you're fearful he might have lost his opportunity and he has to work twice as hard to get it back?
I think Seth's going to win the title next week, and then he's going to hold it until WrestleMania, and then Finn Balor's going to beat him for it, because I don't really know.
Drop it to Finn again, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. So 4 to 6 months with a torn labrum.
It's probably six, yeah.
Yeah, and the doctor said that he went in there and a little bit more damage, more severe than they thought, but should make a recovery.
Which is always great news.
Yeah, no, yeah, of course. But here's the thing. To me, John, the issue with this is that I think that the wrestlers always need to get the reaction from the crowd where they're going, this is awesome, or they're going, holy, blankety blank. But I think that I don't think every match needs to have like those kind of moves. And I think in a state that we are, where it's instant gratification, I think that, the risks are more because they're trying to please the fans. And I just think, to me, that, some matches, they should be, saved, those kind of moves. I know it's SummerSlam. I know it's for the Universal title. But we've seen those moves too much that it's just become like, oh, okay, the powerbomb of the turnbuckle. It's, to me, I think that's an issue as well.
Yeah, and I mean, just to go on to another point, I think Sasha Banks is someone I worry about because she's got a back injury, but she's had other injuries and stuff. And I mean, she took a fall in her neck and back area at SummerSlam. Like, I think Charlotte was going to give her a backbreaker kind of thing on the top rope, and she just kind of dropped her. And poor thing landed right on her head and neck. And I mean, how much does Sasha Banks weigh? 105, 110 pounds, like, if that. And you can't go out there taking bumps that 250-pound men are taking and expect you're going to have the same recovery time, That's just the human body. You can only take so much. And she's, what, 23, 24 years old? She's already got nagging injuries on her
and she's body mentioned and several like that, times, so. Too, that she feels like, although she's 24, she feels like she's 40 her times, her body. So you bring up a good point. How much longer can it take? I mean, you said it yourself, and I've mentioned it to Jeff, too, when we did our SummerSlam recap on the High Spot Podcast Hot Tag Edition. And my main concern was, injuries are injuries, depending on who you're working with. But again, how much now – we talked about Finn. Do they pick up right where they left off? And I kind of feel they should. They owe it to Finn, and he's just that good of a worker.
He'll be hot at that time, too. He'll be hot in March.
Oh, I can see a 24 documentary on Finn Balor and his recuperation, just like they did with Seth Rollins. Do you think now with Sasha and, rumors of how, management and Vince is kind of concerned with the fact that she is getting injured, because she kind of reminds me like a Daniel Bryan, what do you think goes on now right now in the women's division on the Raw brand with that title? Does Sasha get it back when she comes back, or do you kind of wean Sasha a little bit away from it for a while?
You got Bayley there, and then you got Nia Jax kind of lurking in the shadows, because what are you going to have her do, beat people for 30 seconds every week for 5 years? You got to do something with Nia Jax. I mean, she's a pretty solid performer. Paige suspended currently for 30 days, but she's around. So they do have some talent there. It's just a matter of using them, right? So I think Sasha is going to be in the mix with Charlotte and Bayley, and it's not a bad group there, but you got to figure out ways to make it work and stuff. I think Charlotte's a really good performer, and she's only got a couple years' experience, really. That match,
that's a scary part too. She's still theoretically very young in the business.
Yeah, she's only 30, but I mean, that match with Natalya was 2 years ago. It was amazing in NXT, and she barely had a year of experience at that point. So, the fact that I think she's grown a lot. In the last year or two. Most improved performer in the whole company is probably Charlotte. She's up there. And I think they're doing a great job, but they can't kill themselves bumping like crazy at live events and every single match of television, because you got to conserve it kind of thing. Wrestlers, sometimes they say a bump card, you can only fill it so much kind of thing. So I think the women's division on Raw will be all right. I hope SmackDown's women's division has a little bit more people in it, but what are you going to do?
To me, John, I think also, too, is we were talking about, we've seen a lot of moves a lot of times, and the fans are kind of expecting to see high-risk maneuvers. I think, to me, that the women are still trying to, even though they shouldn't, because they've already proved how good they are, I still feel like they have to validate them being there every single time they wrestle. And that's why, for example, Sasha Banks will do those high-risk maneuvers with Charlotte. I feel like they were nervous. They're on the main stage as well in SummerSlam. They wanted to prove a point. They wanted to say that they belong, but they really don't need to do those things anymore. I mean, there's a couple occasions where Sasha was like, man, you were really fearful that she really got hurt. So I mean, to me, honestly, like the women, look, man, they're there. They have their spot. They've worked so hard for it. And I think too, they need to also get it out of the back of their minds that every single time they go there, they have to validate their position. They don't need to, in my opinion. And I think that's how they walk sometimes into the match, and that's why sometimes, you know, that match wasn't as crisp in the beginning as we saw. But you know, another match too that kind of course was had controversy was Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton. Now everyone's going to talk about this. Everyone's got their theory. Everyone's got their conspiracy, right?
Yeah.
And look, that's what they want to do. They want you to get talking about it. Now everyone's like, oh man, you know, how can you have the night end like that? Well, you know what? It's to me, I liked it because it's real and it leaves you going, wondering, wow, how did it end? And that was the talk all night, the next day, even to now that we're talking about
it.
It's
crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
What would you say, in your mind, in your opinion, happened in those closing moments of the match?
A great wrestling story.
Yeah.
The best bully heel wrestler I've seen since probably like Vader 20-something years ago. Because Lesnar, as a face, doesn't really work. He sucks as a face, to be honest. I'm just like, his match with Dean Ambrose sucked at WrestleMania. I think we could agree with that.
Yeah.
And because if he's just out there throwing suplexes, the crowd's cheering him, he's not that exciting. But if he's the heel bully, you want to see the guy beat him. You want to see the guy hit an RKO through the table. The crowd went crazy when that happened, right? It didn't break the table, but the fact that Orton hit that move was a huge deal. And you know, when Orton hit the DDT and all that stuff. So whenever somebody beats Lesnar, whether it's at WrestleMania next year, pick somebody, Roman Reigns. I don't know. Is it going to be
not. That's
Nakamura?
Like.
Like, I hope it's Nakamura, to be honest. Yeah. Like, that's who I would want to see. Or Samoa Joe or someone like that. Or Sami Zayn pulls off the upset. Or Finn Balor. I don't know. But you gotta have somebody that's going to be... Like, the next time Brock Lesnar has a match, you know how much hype is going to be around it? What's he going to do to the guy? Because there's people that thought he legitimately beat up Randy Orton, right? And he didn't. It's part of the show. The fact that Randy Orton is willing to say, okay, I'm going to sit here and let this man that's 290 pounds elbow me the head four times to cut me open is crazy to me.
Isn't it? But, I mean, it's crazy that you would be like, oh, yeah, so listen, take one for the... You know, just like Cena, took one for the team and just... got just like annihilated with those elbows.
But the thing is, if you're in the main event and you're getting a percentage of the gate and you're getting a percentage of not necessarily pay-per-view buys because they don't have that anymore, but the guys that are main eventing, they're like, okay, here's say $300,000 or whatever just for that match. We don't know what the amount is. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
He probably got a really nice bonus for being in the main event.
It must have been a pretty nice bonus. It must have been a really good bonus.
And he's having a kid with his new wife soon, so there you go. He needs some money. But I'm sure Randy's got...
She looks like she can spend, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah. God.
No, actually...
You know what I mean, though? Like, it was a believable storyline because, like you guys said, after that match, I was on Twitter and Facebook and getting emails, and I got 150 comments on my site, on my review on my site, tjwrestling.net, on SummerSlam, because people were just arguing about it. Brock Lesnar hurt him, or that match shouldn't have gone last because it was stupid, and Finn Balor's match should have went last because he won the title. No, that match should have went last because Brock Lesnar was in the match, and because Brock Lesnar's going to get people talking after, and that's what it did. And the next time Brock Lesnar's in the match, whether it's Survivor Series, I don't know if he's going to be there, but maybe, or Royal Rumble or whenever, it's going to be a huge deal because of what happened at SummerSlam. And I want to see him and Orton again, to be honest, because why not?
Yeah, that might be interesting. And, you know, Lesnar was obviously punished very substantially by Stephanie McMahon, you know, a lot of hit to the pocket. But, you know, talk about believable and thinking that it was actually happening in a shoot. I mean, another person I thought about was Jericho, right? One of my all-time favorites getting in there, actually, and having an altercation with Brock Lesnar. I mean, what's your perspective on something like that? I mean, I can see both sides of it, but I'm more leaning towards the side of me of Jericho. I mean, kind of standing up and being trying to be professional and stand up for the boys. And, I mean, what did you make of that whole altercation between the two of them?
Yeah, it came out in the Wrestling Observer, I think, the next day, and then it picked up, like, wildfire. It was on, like, mainstream news sites and stuff. Brock Lesnar, Chris Jericho fight or whatever. And, it's funny how people get crazy when wrestlers, you know, quote-unquote fight for real when it's really just, like, a backstage yelling thing. But, you know, he probably was legitimately concerned about Randy because look at his body, how it was, like, it wasn't just selling. Like, it looked like he was legitimately hurt. And maybe Jericho thought, you know, that's not the finish. The finish is hitting an F5 or something, right? So maybe it was supposed to be, maybe he thought that Lesnar was going to hit those forearms and pick him up and hit an F5 and pin him. But when do you see a TKO finish in WWE? That doesn't happen, right? So
yeah,
and I think, like Meltzer said, they only told a handful of people to finish, kind of thing. So it was really probably just like Lesnar, Orton, Paul Heyman, Vince McMahon, like Michael Hayes, his inner circle, and Triple H and whatever. But that's really it. They don't want people to know because they don't want it to get leaked to the internet, which is good. And you know, that's the way it is. And I think Jericho standing up and thinking it was real is shows how good of an angle it was. So.
You know, yeah, and also shows
it works.
Also shows Jericho is a leader in there, and he's looking out for his friend, which is a good thing. It's like admirable, and obviously it's not going to lead to anything because it was just a scuffle. At the end of the day, like a lot of people are saying, it's the boys being the boys, you know what I mean? And even Jericho didn't even address it on Talk is Jericho. So, you know, it doesn't seem like it's a big deal. I think they're just moving on from that, you know. But, you know, I give Jericho kudos for even stepping up to the guy and getting forehead to forehead, if that's what the reports were. I mean, the guy, you know, it's ballsy. I mean, he like, took down Goldberg at one point, too,
that I
heard.
Yeah, I was about to say, he's got man enough to know, hey, I took down Bill Goldberg. I could take out Brock
Lesnar. You think a guy that wears a scarf like that wouldn't
he's
get...
He's almost 50. Like, he's 46 this year. Like, yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about, too, but I got to talk to you about Jericho. And not only, you know, him standing up for Randy and the boys, but I'm loving this pairing with Kevin Owens. I'm loving his, ever since he came back, just ever since he turned heel, it's just been funny.
So much
it's
more
just
comfortable.
Been, it's been great. It's been hilarious. It's been, you know, and it just makes you appreciate Jericho.
Yeah, I'm Canadian, and I don't shy away from mentioning that when I read my reviews and everything. And so, I mean, him and Owens is like a, you know, dream team for those of us in Canada. Like, add Sami Zayn to
it. It's a bromance. That's what it is. But, it's a bromance.
Yeah. I don't necessarily like the Jericho name. I just think it's not creative enough. Like, I actually wrote Jericho before WWE was calling it. So when they, in 2009, like when I was writing, I used Jericho like right away. And then they used it like a couple months later on TV. And everyone's like, John's the one that named the team or whatever. And I'm like, okay. But now they do it all the time, and it does like Breezango, and I'm just like, eh. Anyway, the fact that he could be 40, he's 46 later this year. I mean, the fact that he could be that age and still be a valuable contributor and stuff, like, there's not many guys that really did a lot at that age that at a high level, and I think he's had some pretty damn good matches. His promos are hilarious in the sense that he could get over a phrase like stupid idiot, which is just, you know, two basic words. And then now he's got the thing where he's like, I'm going to show you it. And then, you know, Tom Phillips asks, what do you mean? And he's like, it or whatever. And it was just so silly, but it works. And he just knows how to get people going and stuff. And there's not that many true heels anymore. The fact that he doesn't want any merchandise when he's a heel, he doesn't want anything like that. So I just love him as a heel. I think as a face, he struggles. You know, at this stage in his career, when he was in his prime, he was better as a face, but he's always been better as a heel. I think he's one of the top 10 heels in the history of the company. And he's such a good performer, and his longevity is amazing. And he's probably in my top 10 favorite wrestlers, maybe top 5.
Yeah, and at this age, he still has pretty good matches. I mean, he closed out Raw, you know, in a good match with Roman Reigns and making Reigns. I mean, Reigns, you know, he has improved his in-ring skills. I tend to
put him
a lot.
Wait, what? Say that again?
His in-ring skills. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I talk a lot better on the microphone than Roman Reigns does, Jeff. Right. So take
no,
it easy.
I just want to make sure because he is a Brian is a he's shown his anti-Roman Reignsism. So I just wanted to hear that twice again to make sure that's what it was.
I thought I was slurring my words. But even at this stage in his life, Jericho basically is you know, despite what he lacks in the ring, because obviously we could all say he's lost a step, and I Stone Cold Steve Austin has mentioned that as well. Whatever he lacks in terms of abilities at his age, he still can overcome that with his personality, because his personality, to coin a phrase, is still larger than life. And Jericho, adding it with KO, just add that special dynamic to a very much depleted tag team division on the Raw brand, because all the tag teams seem to be right now on SmackDown Live.
Absolutely. And So is there a question there, or are you just...
No, sorry. Just making a statement there, buddy. Just making a statement that Jericho is the best, and I think we all can agree to that.
No. I'm agreeing with you that.
Someone who's also the best, too.
He was drinking in the... You were drinking in the gift of Jericho, weren't you?
Drinking
right
it
there?
In.
Was drinking you were just drinking it in, weren't you? You were savoring that phrase.
Another person who had an amazing night was AJ Styles. Finally got the credit he did. Well, I mean... Finally, he's getting the recognition as far as winning the matches. John, I'd say this before Brian. He deserved it. He earned it. A win against John Cena clean. And in the middle of the ring, he gets the win over Cena. And now he's the face that runs the place on SmackDown. And how excited are you to see AJ Styles finally be put in a main event for the title against Dean Ambrose with maybe a good chance to win that?
Yeah, and this will be his third main event this year, right?
Yeah.
He had the two with Roman Reigns, and those matches were really good. I mean, I think he's the wrestler of the year this year. Do you guys agree? Like, he's the best performer.
Oh, man.
No arguments.
Yeah.
And I usually never agree with Jeff, but I have to actually agree with him on this point.
Yeah.
You're right. Both of you guys are right.
Because he's done it with everyone, and I think as a character, he improved. Like, I don't know how much TNA you guys watch. I watched a fair bit, but, like, he wasn't that good when he was a heel in TNA. But I think the 2 years he spent in Japan, he really developed a good persona with the Bullet Club. And his match has improved, and I mean, he's, what, 38 or 39, he's as good as ever. I hope he has 4 or 5 years full-time, because, you know, he's not going to wrestle too deep in your 40s, but he's so good, and I think he's going to win the title from Ambrose, whether it's at Backlash or the next one after, whatever, is in October. But, I mean, I would put it on him right away, because you want it on your best guy. He's going to have good matches to everyone. That match with Ziggler on TV was amazing on SmackDown, one of the best TV matches this year. And the match with Cena, I think it's in my top two. That one and Nakamura and Zayn from NXT Dallas. I just love that match. So, I mean, the fact that Cena put him over clean is... People give Cena a lot of crap, but he deserves a lot of praise for that because he has done an incredible job with AJ Styles in terms of the fact when AJ Styles got in the ring with him the first time and turned heel against him. If AJ Styles does that with anyone else, he doesn't get as big a reaction. But it's John Cena. It's a big deal. So for Cena to, like, take that, and then they have a match, and he puts him over at Money in the Bank, although it wasn't clean. And then they did this match, and he won clean as a whistle. And I love it. And that's how you make a guy start. You got to use your established guys to put over the younger guys. Not necessarily younger in this case. They're about the same age. But you know what I mean? Like, as far as a new guy goes. So it worked tremendously.
And, of course, again, with AJ, I mean, in just every match he has, he's just so good. And that's the best thing you can say. He's so good. And
never misses anything.
No, and I'm glad. Even that phenomenal form, it's like he's actually in slow motion when he's up there. He gets all that height.
Yeah.
I mean,
he does a 450 springboard. And then that move that he does, like the Uchigiroshi, it's called, where you put the guy on your shoulders. It's like the AA, and you knee him in the back. Like, that's a power move.
Yeah. And
he's great.
And finally, I'm glad the WWE is seeing that this guy is like in their top five, you know, the guy they can depend on and the guy that should be for the foreseeable future be in the title picture, if not the champion on SmackDown side. But, you know, speaking of champions, too, they introduced two new titles, the tag team and the women's title. I like them. I like the silver and blue. I like the women's championship. No issues there. I'm not going to boo like the Brooklyn crowd did with the Universal title.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on who's going to win the women's and the tag team?
I'll say this first. I'll ask you guys a question because I like asking people this because I interact with people all the time and they bitch about this a lot. And personally, I don't care. But what do you think about how there's 8 titles right now, 4 on each show, and then the Cruiserweight title is probably going to come to Raw in September? Do you guys think there's too many or is it good the way it is? Because to me, I don't really mind it because I think you have to build two separate brands. You're going to need 4 titles in each show. That's just the way it is. And it doesn't bother me if there's too many titles because as long as the storylines make sense around the titles and it's a big deal when there's a title change, that's what matters. So what do you guys think about the titles?
Okay,
we'll talk about the
change. I'm rolling up my sleeves now, John. All right. Now you've really gotten me here. So... No, I don't mind all the titles because I think he needed them regardless because if SmackDown didn't have any tag team titles or didn't have a women's championship, then basically, like you had mentioned before and a lot of people mentioned, what are they fighting for? What I still am still voting and I'm protesting for and trying to write a petition for, I want the television title. to come back in some way, some form. Because I think that was a title that needed a lot more notoriety and is very underrated. But speaking of the titles, I don't mind them. I like them. My biggest issue with them, and this goes to the whole debate, Jeff and John, of, you know, the person makes the title, the titles that make the person. I completely agree with that. But when we come to terms of the Universal title, and then you look at the new SmackDown Women's Championship and the tag team titles for SmackDown Live as well, they all look similar. So to me, there's no distinction between them. They all look alike. And I know they're probably doing that for brand marketing, but to me, when you look at the Universal title and how they built this up into this huge mecca, the first ever Universal, and we all probably had images and doodled on our pieces of paper of what it could possibly look like. I'm sure Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan definitely thought, gave an impression of what they thought the Universal title was going to look like. I need to see some distinction between them because I think all this gets mixed in and I can't separate the two. If SmackDown is going to be a separate brand, it has to be completely separate from what the look of Raw is. Would you guys agree or no?
To me, you need the titles if you're going to – with the brands, you do. They need to have something to fight for. My thing is they already do this where the SmackDown guys travel with Raw. So you had like in Raw, you had the dark match was AJ Styles.
They're not doing it anymore, though. This is the last
time. This is the last time? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So next week they're doing Monday SmackDown house shows are starting next week.
Okay. Okay. So, all right. So they were traveling. So if you had wanted to, because to me, honestly, before this Universal title, to me, I felt the world title on SmackDown was kind of getting a little bit devalued. And I was like, to the point where like, I didn't have a feel of who the world champion was, you know? So now that they brought the Universal title, to me, my issue with that is that, you know, the name of the title. To me, that's what bothers me is the name. To me, yeah. I would have liked the floating, at least a world champion to float back and forth. Maybe one pay-per-view for the SmackDown pay-per-view, you'll have that champion fight on SmackDown. Then for the Clash of Champions, they'll fight at Clash, you know, something like that. I get the fact that they want to have, you know, two champions, that's fine. But what bothers me is the name of the Universal title, and then also, too, is here's the thing. To avoid that reaction that you would have had at Barclays, you would have liked to maybe introduce it maybe a week before just so that it would delve in the minds of the people. Like, even if they didn't like it, it'd be a week to at least crap on it, and then you wouldn't be able to crap on it on SummerSlam, right? Because it took away from the match. Now, to me, how can you show that to somebody that night and lift up and look at the title and be like, ooh, this is nice? I mean, you'd have to think that like people aren't going to like it. Will it grow on me? Of course it'll grow on me because I have no choice to it. But they should have debuted it about a week or two before to lead up and show the guys what exactly the prize is for. What do you think, John?
Agree about the Universal title. They should have done like one of those overdone contract signing segments and introduced the title there on like the Raw before, because they were just doing promos every week anyway, so you may as well introduce the title. As far as the other point about there's four titles that have the same look now, right? The two men's titles and the two women's titles. It's brand marketing. It's the company wanting to have their logo on the titles, because when these people go out in public and they're doing interviews and stuff, the WWE logo is right there. So that's really what it is. And my degree is in marketing, business marketing. I'm not a journalism, but I'm a business marketing guy. So the marketing guy in me says, you know, it's not a bad strategy. But I totally get why people bitch and moan about it, because we have seen other things like the Winged Eagle title that was really cool going up in the 80s and 90s. And all these other titles that they've had over the years, but
yeah, you still have the Intercontinental and the United States title too, and they're separate entities. They don't have the big gigantic WWE logo as well, so they kind of get lost in the shuffle. I mean, they've been lost in the shuffle for several years because they're secondary titles, and we know that WWE doesn't really do a lot to promote them or to make them significant, as you know, as you would do to build up to make them world champions themselves. But, you know, I get your point, John. Yeah, it is marketability. That's kind of what I saw, too. Don't really have a big issue with it. But here's the thing. And maybe this is me being the bitter fan in a way. But, like, when you constantly go out and promote as promoters and a company that, listen, this is separate. This is going to be competition. But it basically all looks the same. How is it really competition to me? If you constantly go on TV and say, well, Raw is the flagship of the WWE, and you constantly keep beating that in, especially before the draft, and then you're trying to separate yourselves from Raw and say it's going to be completely different, and then I see tag team titles that mirror each other completely, and then women's titles that mirror themselves completely. And then world titles, they're basically the same thing. I'm like, okay, well, then what was this big hype for? You basically were hyping me for nothing. That's what I get in the end run when I look and retrospectively see this back in my head. You guys were building up nothing, especially for me.
That's a good point. Like, that's why they should have Vince McMahon as the one that said, like, okay, we're going to have the titles look like this because it's a company-wide decision. Because he's kind of the one in the middle, right? But
yeah.
He's not on television. But I totally get what you're saying, and that's a good point. You know, I'm fine with the number of titles and the look. Like, the look doesn't bother me. I have a good friend that's a graphic designer, and he goes crazy about it. And I'm just like, I don't care. And he's like, because you're not a designer and you don't understand. I'm like, that's true. But that's what 80% of the audience doesn't care either. Like, but I think they care. Like, that Brooklyn crowd was chanting about the title, and Seth Rollins was pissed about it. And he complained about it on Twitter. Mick Foley complained about it on Twitter. And I'm just like, okay. Or Facebook, like, he did a long post. And, you know, it's one of those things. Some fans care about it too much. But as long as the title wins mean something, then I'm cool with it. And I don't want to see a champion on both shows just because it's overdoing one character. Like, why should one character be on? Like, Heath Slater is currently the only one that gets to be on both shows.
He's the hottest free agent out there, man.
Yeah.
How good has Heath Slater's work been the last couple of months? It's been phenomenal.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
But were we going to talk about the titles and who we think we're going to win them? Is that what you originally asked, right?
Yeah, exactly. Who do you think are going to be the eventual tag team champions and women's champion?
For tag teams, what I would do is American Alpha, Usos final. I think they're the two best teams. I think the Usos are really good. I know people complain about them being, you know, stale or whatever, and that's why you got to use this to turn them heel.
Yeah.
They should turn heel and win the titles. Win the titles doing like a pull the tights thing or something like that. And then after they win the titles, then really push the heel thing. You don't have to turn them heel before the match, but after the win. And then you build up American Alpha for the next few months to try to win the title from them. Because the Usos, to me, represent quality performers with a stale gimmick. So you turn them heel and they have a good gimmick. Cause when do they ever screw up in a match or anything like that? They always have good matches when they really get time. So I think the brand split's like good for a team like the Usos because it'll freshen them up a bit. And American Alpha, I love them. So you kind of build them up as the main team, and then you have the Usos win the titles. Like, if Heath Slater and Rhino win, I wouldn't mind it because it would be kind of funny, but I don't think it's going to happen. And I like Breezango. Like, the Breezango had a good match with American Alpha on SmackDown because they weren't treated like a joke. It's like, here's 10 minutes, go have a competitive match, and all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, they're pretty good in the ring. Well, yeah, everyone's good in the ring in WWE if you give them a chance, really.
Especially with the depth that SmackDown Live has. I mean, I love tag team wrestling when I was a kid watching it, and they have a lot of depth here as opposed to Raw. And so, you know, for a team like Breezango, you know, they may have lost in the tournament, but I think they're going to be given a good opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of potential.
And so the women's, I think a six pack challenge is okay. What I would do instead is like an elimination match, and that way it's more of a build up so that they could get 15 to 20 minutes and they could kind of work. But, you know, I think they're kind of worried that some of the girls like Carmella and Alexa Bliss might get lost in a match that was really that long. So you do a six-pack challenge, there'll be one fall, there'll be two girls in the ring, the other four will be outside the ring most of the match, just because that's the way they'll do it. I don't remember who I picked.
You didn't pick anyone yet. You're building up the anticipation.
Oh, I'm picking Natalya because I think.
Ooh, you know, Natalya. Okay.
She hasn't won a title in 6 years. I remember it was Survivor Series 2010, and again I'm rooting for the Canadian because she's awesome.
You're such a homer, John.
She's a wonderful person. Well, she lives in Tampa for the last 10 years. If that makes you happy, but
doesn't make me happy. Yeah. It should make you mad.
Hey, if I lived in Calgary and I could move to Tampa, I would go to Tampa every
day.
All
right. I see.
But anyway, I just think, like, you start out with a heel, right? And that way you chase, you have Becky Lynch chasing or whatever. But, like, if they put on Nikki Bella, it wouldn't be a bad move either. And the other one is Naomi. She's like a wild card in the sense that, remember a couple years ago, she was really close to getting the title, I thought. Like, she was getting over, and the crowd likes her. And then they turned her heel, and it was a bad move because she's not a really good heel, but she's better as a face. So, I mean, if you put on a Naomi, it would probably be good for her, too. But I think Natalya is my choice right now. Like, I would rather see Becky win it in a few months rather than now.
Really? I think
Nikki wins it.
You think Nikki wins? I think Nikki and Carmella kind of cancel each other out. Naomi is a wild card, but I think Naomi kind of, you know, is kind of up and down. You don't know. It's going to be between Natalya and Becky. I just think you heard the crowd on SmackDown Live cheering for Becky. That's probably a death wish to Becky because she's probably not going to win it that way. But how could you not when, you know, she's, look at what she's been through, theoretically. Every tag team partner she's had has betrayed her. You know, you feel sorry for the girl because she's had chances against Charlotte. So maybe this is her moment, theoretically, to win it. Not that she's going to have a long title reign, but maybe to be the first ever SmackDown Women's Champion, maybe that'd be a nice step for Becky because as much as I love Natty too, and believe me, I love Natty. But other than that, she definitely has been a staple in the women's division for a while. But isn't it all about, well, again, this is me, you know, eating, you know, what they're feeding me in the WWE programming. It's supposed to be something different. So to have Becky win, it would be, oh, the new evolution, the newer generation is going to carry this division.
Yeah, I mean, I like Becky, but I would rather see her win it in a one-on-one match when it means more and this storyline's built up. This just feels like, you know, here's a new title. There's only six women in the division at this point. Eva Marie's there, but she's suspended, so I don't know.
Eva Marie, oh man, jeez.
Yeah, I heard some of your tweets too. You know, it's, thank God. You know, it's so sad that we couldn't see her at SummerSlam and her debuts. Yeah. It's to me, it's building my anticipation to, you know, not see her.
I think it's hilarious. The way that they've done that character cracks me up. I think that's the kind of stuff they need to do more often. Her entrance is better than the entrance of Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Dean Ambrose combined.
Yeah, when do you get your own ring announcer in your own music to it's introduce amazing. You?
I think other people should have better ring announcers, better entrances, because there's some boring ones in the main roster. NXT is amazing in entrances. Like Bobby Roode and Nakamura are amazing entrances.
Which one's your ringtone now? Do you still have Nakamura or is Glorious your new ringtone on your phone?
I don't. My phone doesn't ring. Do people call anywhere? I just text people.
How about
it's
that?
Like, why are you calling me? Just text me instead. I don't want to talk.
I'll have people just call me so that everyone can hear the Glorious because that's my ringtone
there
now.
Yeah. He's Canadian too, by the way.
Bobby Roode. There you go. So getting to TakeOver. I was there with Brian. You're talking about entrances. Dude, it's not only that, but to me, each match, you know, it's new faces now because a lot of guys have moved up now to the main roster. But still, even though there's new faces, as far as like I'm talking about like in WWE, because we know Austin Aries, we know Bobby Roode, you know, and Nakamura. But in the WWE platform, you know, to me, it was six matches because a lot of people are complaining that SummerSlam was too long, which I agree. You know, only 2 hours, and you got great wrestling, great stories. It was just great. It was amazing. What were your thoughts on TakeOver, and what was your favorite part?
Everything. It was such a fun show. I think the tag match was the best match.
Yeah.
The Revival is such a fun team in the sense that they remind me of, we were mentioning those teams we grew up watching in the 80s and stuff. They remind me of those tag matches we used to grow up watching. And, you know, they remind me of, like, the Hart Foundation, all those kind of teams, because they're just technically sound and all this kind of stuff. And they're a true team. You don't see them splitting up anytime soon. They're going to be together for a long time, and it's great. And they're not even big guys. They're just, you know, no flips, just fists, all that kind of stuff. So it was a great match to see them and Gargano and Ciampa. And, like, you guys were there, so like that's standing ovation after a loss. That doesn't happen very often. You can't force people to do that. And the fact that people did that after a 20-minute match, like, that's amazing. And then the other parts I liked, Bobby Roode. I saw him at a House of Hardcore event, Tommy Dreamer, in May, and I got to like work the event, I guess you could say, because I'm good friends with Mickey James, and I got to meet everyone, talk to him and everything. And he's not a big guy. Like, I'm like 6'1" and like 240. And he's not that big, but the way that they present him in NXT is like he's a huge deal.
Bigger,
right?
Than life, you know?
Yeah. And
the entrance, yeah.
He's not even, he doesn't even have a gimmick. He just has a song. Like, let's just be honest here. It's not even a gimmick. What's his gimmick? Well, he's an arrogant guy that says he's got money and he could, whatever. Well, anybody in wrestling could say that. And he just, like, he's a robe and I think it's a good look and everything, but there's a lot of wrestlers that wrestled with a robe before. Like, it reminds you of Rick Rude in a sense.
Yes, I was about to say that. You remind me a lot of Ravishing Rick Rude,
like Ric
early
Flair
on.
Too, with the ropes. But, like, It's just a guy, and it's like the song is like so popular and over already. Like, it's amazing. I saw it's on the UK iTunes chart. It's like the 40th song.
Already over like a million downloads and stuff. Yeah. That's...
it's amazing, the song. Like, I don't know if you guys saw the YouTube video of the CFO guys making the song.
Yeah.
They're just like marking out over making a song that they made. And I was just laughing my head off. Like, it's just so silly. And then the Nakamura entrance was... It was the guy playing the violin for like 5 minutes. I'm like, I'm a grown man watching a guy enter to violin music, and I'm going crazy.
Goosebumps, man. Goosebumps. Yeah,
like, I don't listen to violin music.
Yeah. No.
You know, I'm a dude. I listen to, you know, rock or rap or whatever. I don't listen to violin crap. But, you know, when Nakamura does it, it's cool. And I think they've done an amazing job of creating an ambiance, I guess the word is, of special entrances in NXT, and you guys that were there. So I mean, you tell me, like, what was it in the arena? Just chill, like it was, when Nakamura's out, like it's almost like the Undertaker.
It was to the point, John, where like we're in the arena, and now the thing is to hum a Nakamura song, and the entire arena was humming it to the point where, you know, the hairs in the back of my neck were standing, but you could see people who are not into it. And I'm speaking of the security guards that work at Barclays, looking around with their mouths open, like they couldn't believe what they were seeing. And I'm sure they've seen concerts before, and nobody was that loud for a wrestler walking down. And honestly, by the end of his entrance, which we were fortunate enough that he came toward our side, and Jeff was freaking out, screaming like a schoolgirl. It was like, oh my God, once he got into the ring, you forget a match is about to happen. People were kind of exhausted. From just the mere entrance, they were that excited for it. I've never really seen that before in my life, but just a testament to NXT. And another thing I want to ask you, John, is that, you know, NXT, in my opinion, has done such a great job, has a great formula of replenishing their talent. Now, of course, they have the Performance Center, but, you know, you look at a lot of these guys, like Jeff had mentioned, Shinsuke, Samoa Joe, Austin Aries, Bobby Roode, not Rude. These guys have been established, not young bucks. They've made their name known all over the world. So with that being said, what do you think in terms of why is the formula work so well for NXT as to oppose, like, and that's only an hour show. What's the difficulty of bringing that same type of mentality in terms of the storylines to get everybody invested in to bring that up to the main roster? Is it more just because the fan base is so much wider on the main roster?
Yeah.
Yeah, the main
roster. I'm asking
roster.
John. I'm not asking you, Jeff.
Well, I'm just looking at Brian. I'm like, well, it's pretty, you know, self-explanatory. It's the advertising. It's a whole
so
different
did
mainstream.
Did I just answer my own question?
Kind of. John,
the thing with the NXT roster that we saw at this show, and you guys were there. I mean, let's see, there were three TNA guys prominently featured: Rude, Samoa Joe, and Austin Aries. And then we got Japan stars who are Nakamura and Asuka in featured roles, and then Hideo Itami. So if you think about it, they're not really developing their own as much as they used to, because the ones that they used to are already on the main roster, so they can't really develop the way that it is. And I think it's kind of an easy promotion to book, in the sense that when you're only doing 5 or 6 matches, it's very easy to fill a card. And if you're giving guys 15 to 20 minutes, if you're signed to a WWE deal, you're going to be good in the ring, especially those guys that come from TNA in Japan. So I'm not saying it's easy in the sense that, oh, anybody can do it. I'm just saying the way that they do it, it's easy. Like, it's not like they're doing anything complicated. How many big angles do they run at takeover events? Like, almost never. The last one was, like, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, which was 2 years ago, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they did kind of have Tommy attack Austin Aries, but that was really it. So they don't really do major angles. They don't really have promos. It's kind of an easy show to do. And the crowd's there to watch good matches. And the guys that are going to watch the shows are the guys like us in our 20s and 30s that grew up watching wrestling. They're not necessarily appealing to kids, and they're not really going for that audience. So, like, Triple H says that when he does his conference calls. Like, he admits, like, we're going for the male audience, and that's what we're going to do. And, you know, it's working in the sense that the brand has grown. But I don't know if you saw the ticket sales for the show, but they sold out, but a lot of those tickets go to, like, StubHub and stuff like that. And there was about 3,000 tickets left the day of the show.
Yeah.
So when I was at WrestleMania in Dallas, I was trying to get NXT tickets right up to the event starting. They were up for, like, $500, because guess what? There was 100,000 people in town.
Yeah.
So there was more of a demand. So, like, I like NXT a lot, but is it going to grow much more than it is right now? I don't think so. I think the best days have come already, and they're still going to be profitable and still going to be good. Well, I don't know if it's profitable, to be honest, but they're still going to be productive is a better word. But are they going to have the group of talent that they had in 2014 and 15? I don't think so.
Yeah, but you know, I still think they're going to be. I know that a lot of guys leave, you know, and Finn Balor was a major hit, and you know, eventually Nakamura and Samoa Joe, and then they'll have to replenish it with guys in their own. I think it just gives them time, though, with guys like Rude and guys like Aries in there for them to, you know, to have time to replenish the new guys that are coming up. So, and I think Ember Moon, I've seen some of her stuff in the other leagues, and she looks really good. First match.
She'll probably beat Asuka.
You think it's her? You think it's going to be her?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And also talk about, like, the you know, we have Women's Revolution, but right now you got, like, an Irish Revolution. You've got a Japanese Revolution, too, awesome. Because and that's something that's amazing. And I think it's all...
years of not even having any Japanese wrestlers for a long time since Tajiri stopped. And now, like, Kota Ibushi in the Cruiserweight Classic, he might win that. So, I mean, there's four or five prominent featured right now. It's pretty awesome.
And about the Cruiserweight Classic, has it exceeded your expectations? Because it has to me. I mean, every match has been just amazing, and I think Triple H has found something else that he can do. Do a year-round tournament, or you know, they're going to introduce the Cruiserweights on Raw. So I think Triple H just keeps finding new things to attract the WWE audience.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. It's kind of like sport, right? Like it's like. Here's a match, and we're going to have the referee stand in the ring and raise the guy's hand like we see in boxing and UFC. And it's totally different than what we usually get in wrestling. And they're not running angles or anything. There's no post-match attack. There's no promos. There's no storylines, right? There's no double teams or anything like that. It's just two guys in a match, and the winner goes on. And the crowd goes crazy for it, and I think it's tremendous. And like that Gargano-Ciampa match was amazing. And then the Ibushi and Cedric Alexander match was, I think, a top five match of the year. And I think Cedric Alexander, 100% he's going to be signed with WWE. And that he won it because of that. He won his contract because of that match. Like, they booked him to lose, but they gave him 15 minutes to show what he could do, right?
Yeah. So, I think those two matches are, at the end of the year, they'll probably be in the top 10. Yeah.
So... It's been a lot of fun. I review the Cruiserweight Classic along with Raw and SmackDown every week and pay-per-view. So I enjoy it. I don't write NXT reviews. I got another writer to do that. But it's the Cruiserweight Classic. Like, we're doing this on a Wednesday night. I'm really excited to watch it. When probably tomorrow morning I'll watch it Thursday and write about it. But it's been a lot of fun just because it's different than the norm. I like the colors. I like Daniel Bryan announcing because he marks out for, like, wrist locks and waist over takedowns. He's like, you guys don't understand how hard it is to, like, turn a guy in a wrist lock. And I'm just like, okay, I believe you. But Moro's really good. And I don't know. It's been a lot of fun. Like, it's totally different than the norm. And, you know, there's people, I'll ask you guys, do you think – there's too much content because in a regular week there's, you know, 3 hours, 2 hours, and then Wednesday is 2 hours also. So, I mean, that's 7 hours right there. Add the pay-per-view, which was a six-hour broadcast. I mean, that's insane amount of content. And then there's post-game shows, pre-game shows. And to me, I'm writing about it, so, you know, it helps pay my bills to write about wrestling. That's my current career. But
yeah, so for you, there's not enough.
Yeah.
There's not enough content.
No, to be honest, it's enough. but, I mean, at the same time, SummerSlam weekend was my best four-day stretch of anything this year because I was at WrestleMania, so I wasn't writing live. So it's like this was great for me. But at the same time, it is a little much, and I think you can burn out the audience a little bit. But at the same time, we're only paying $9.99 a month. It's $11.99 Canada, but whatever. And damn dollar exchange. But, yeah. You know what I mean, though? Like, is it too much, or is it – why should we care that they're doing two pay-per-views a month? Because we're not going to get charged more, so I don't care.
Well, I've had the same discussion with Jeff, though, in terms of the pay-per-views. To me, it's going to be very difficult because when I look at the draft, the separation of it, I think you have more of the depth in terms of the roster on Raw than you do SmackDown. So when I see a Backlash pay-per-view, I mean, besides the tag team titles in the women's division, I'm really going to only really be focusing on AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose as opposed when you look at – the Raw side, you might have a lot bit more storylines that are they're going to be used a little bit more. Plus, Raw is a 3-hour show, so they can work with a lot more. Though, granted, you know, 3-hour show they've claimed is really difficult to book. I personally don't feel there's a lot of content. I think it's kind of just right because it gives everybody the ability to, you know, choose what you want. And that's what we want. Before, there's not enough content out there where we're like, you know what, this is boring. SmackDown, we already get the results basically once it's taped on Tuesday, and then there we got to wait for the pay-per-view, and then the go-home shows stink. So as long as there's variety, I think it's an improvement. And I've mentioned the Jeff several times when we've done the show, too. I mean, besides content, it's probably the best time right now since I can remember from a long time ago to be a wrestling fan, because not only do you have the WWE, which we talk about, and I guess that's the popular thing to talk about, but we have things like TNA, who's, you know, trying to rebuild their image again after a couple of unsuccessful attempts to kind of, I guess, theoretically try to compete with the WWE. You have Lucha Underground, New Japan, obviously, if you want to, you know, find out content on New Japan, Ring of Honor. I mean, the list just goes on. And I think an untapped resource is obviously the indie scene, too, which is why I think NXT, granted, maybe the best has gone by already in NXT, but you have that potential now where these guys have more of a platform. Unlike when WCW closed down, there wasn't anything else to watch but WWE. You had no choice.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, we had 1 hour on Saturday afternoons, and that was about it. So
yeah, right.
It's a lot different, and you know, it is. I wish I had more time sometimes to watch Ring of Honor and TNA, because usually I get burned out just from watching and writing about WWE. It's just, you can only handle so much. And I watch New Japan on Access. We got on a different channel here, but I enjoy it. And those matches are usually like a year old, but it's still.
Yeah, see, I wish I had that channel, because I would love to really. I know I can YouTube him, but I really would love to, you know, especially the G1 tournament, that Kenny Omega one. I would really love to study him and watch him, because I think that's another guy that will, you know,
he's amazing.
One day
he'll
will
be
grace
in WWE
us
next year, probably the year after. He's from Winnipeg also, so there's
another Canadian.
Canadian
too there. I know another guy that also intrigues me too. Him,
he was
no Canadian,
he was in,
man.
Developmental, actually. He was in WWE. Yeah. They told him to go out and get better, and he did. Ciampa is the same guy, Tommaso Ciampa. So it shows that they're willing to give guys a chance if they go out and improve.
But John, but look, speaking from a fan's perspective, say you weren't writing. I mean, I know you got to pay your bills, and I'm not gonna stop a working man like you from paying your bills. But as a fan standpoint, to have all this content, isn't it kind of refreshing? The fact, hey, you know, if I want to, and I'm kind of a little burned out, W, hey, I'll just watch some New Japan, or hey, I wonder what's going on with Ring of Honor. From a fan standpoint, you couldn't ask for anything more, because you have so many more choices this time, don't you?
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't watch all 3 hours of Raw if I didn't have to write about it. I would probably fast forward through a lot of it, like people tell me that they do all the time. I'll get people that tell me, oh, I read your Raw deal, and then I just watched the parts that you wrote
mentioned
about that were good. Yeah, and I totally get it, because it can drag. And how many shows do you watch regularly that are 3 hours long other than sports? Like, I watch baseball almost, you know, I watch a lot of Blue Jays games. I watch almost every NFL game that is available to watch. I get the Sunday ticket. I watch the Sunday night, Thursday night, Monday night. I'm an NFL junkie. I bet on it. I do fantasy and baseball and basketball and everything like that. But, you know, for a regular TV show that's, you know, with scripted entertainment, there's nothing else that goes 3 hours, just wrestling. So I think 3 hour Raw hurts Raw a lot more. Like, I think SmackDown's better, but at the same time, it's an option for people that have content, and, you know, good for us. We're spoiled.
Yeah, we're spoiled. And plus we have the network too.
It's like crazy, but we're spoiled.
Yeah.
John Canton, man, can't thank you enough, man, for coming on the show. I know
it's been too long, John. It's been way too long. But we know you're a busy man, though, so we're not going to hold it against you.
Oh, I mean, I'm happy to come on like every other month, whatever you want.
Oh, that's great, man. Much appreciated. And again, John Canton, follow him on Twitter at @JohnReport, and also on TJRWrestling.net.
Don't go to .com, all right?
No, .net.
I want to get .com back. Like, currently is like floating on the internet. I'm trying to get it back, but I don't know what to do.
And he has, and he hosts his TJR Wrestling podcast too. So, listen, John, so much thanks to you for giving us your take on SummerSlam weekend and TakeOver and just, you know, the last couple episodes on Raw and SmackDown. Really, I think...
so much stuff, man.
Yeah. Oh, I'm telling you, man.
We didn't even get into everything, to be honest.
No, yeah, honestly, good. I would love to, but then it would be like, you know, we'd be like Raw. It would be a three-hour show, and we're trying to
yes, put... Yes, except the difference is, though, John, we'd be a three-hour show that actually would be entertaining.
Yeah, there yeah, exactly. So, John, continued success, man, and I know your Rams are going to open up soon. They're actually on Hard Knocks.
It's been kind of a boring Hard Knocks, to be honest. Like, I don't know. What do you, they don't really have big personalities. Like, William Hayes is kind of a funny guy. I already knew that. But, like, Todd Gurley's not really outgoing. Like, the quarterback's a rookie. What's he going to say?
I think Hard Knocks has kind of outlived itself, I think, in a way.
And they're going to give him a contract extension, too, like, with Mr. 7-9? I mean, I don't know about that, man.
You know what I say, though? There was a five-year stretch before Jeff Fisher where the Rams won, like, 15 games total. I don't think people realize how bad they were. They were, like, one win, two wins, three wins, two wins, and, like, six wins. Like, it was so bad. The fact that they got seven wins, like, 3 years in a row or whatever, it's amazing to me. So when you have low expectations, I don't like Jeff Fisher, but, you know, whatever. You know, he only has 9 losses to go to have the most losses in the history of the NFL. So there you go.
Wow. That's a nice little, that's a nice little tidbit right there, John.
Yeah, and another thing I'll say is people will say to me, oh, do you care that they're in L.A.? I'm like, I'm happy they're in L.A. St. Louis is kind of a not attractive city, to be honest.
It's a baseball chance to go out to L.A. eventually, you know?
I went to St. Louis in a game, and it was right after the Ferguson, Missouri murders. And I didn't leave my hotel. The stadium was, like, right 2 blocks away. It was crazy. The flags were half-mast. I'm like, holy shit.
Wow. Welcome to St. Louis.
It wasn't a pleasant time. I'm not ripping on the city, but it just wasn't that. And think of it, if you're a free agent and you could go to Los Angeles, I think, you know, if you got a personality, you're going to be in commercials, you're going to be more exposure. The team seems like more of a big deal already, so that's kind of cool. And since I live near Toronto, I don't really care what city they're in because I'm not at home games anyway. So.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't really affect you that much of them.
I'm going to see them in Detroit in October, so that's good.
That's awesome, man. So
I'm
listen,
sure
man.
It'll be a terrible game. But anyway,
so listen, man. You have the Raptors. You got
DJs.
Blue Jays. You know, we'll see what happens with them. I think they'll make the postseason. I think that they'll win the AL
close,
East.
Man. It's three teams are right now. Boston's really hot. Baltimore's pitching kind of stinks, so I think they'll fade. And Toronto's actually got the best pitching in the American League, which is a total surprise.
Yeah, so
but I'm happy.
Yeah, so you got that, and then the Rams Cup coming season. You might have a star in Goff. You don't know. It's too early to tell, but you know
I
it's always
Todd Gurley.
Yeah. Man, Todd Gurley, top five running back taken this year, maybe in fantasy football. So
number one, man.
Number one for you, yeah. So listen, not like Bobby Flay, you took David Johnson. I don't know if you saw that celebrity thing, but you know whatever. It is what it is. But I really like Gurley. So John, man, thanks a lot. Pleasure having you on. And yeah, maybe we'll get you on. For Survivor Series in Toronto.
Sure, whatever you want. I'm happy to talk to you guys. I enjoy it. Because I do my own podcast, so I don't go on that many others. Like, a lot of people ask me, but I don't always say yes, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because you can only talk about so much wrestling when you write as much as I do.
Oh, I know. It just gets, you know.
But I like talking to you guys because you know your stuff, and we have a good conversation. So, happy to join you anytime.
Okay, man. And that's
Don't be shy.
John Canton, TJRWrestling.net, Raja.com, and also TJR Wrestling Podcast. Guy does it all. Guy, you know, writes, and it's for stuff he loves. He loves talking wrestling and WWE, man. So, listen, man, like I said, thank you so much, and we'll talk again soon, man. Take care.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Wow, Jeff, I don't know where to begin to thank John Canton enough for coming on. It's always great to talk to him. I know it's been a long time, but, you know, when we just started talking, we could have gone on for hours and hours because it's just natural talking about it because I sense the appreciation John has for the art form and for what is professional wrestling that you and I grew up to love, and John loves it as well.
Yeah, interesting.
Despite the fact that he's Canadian.
I know, we won't hold that against him. Some of the best guys that we love are Canadian.
Exactly,
Jericho,
all
Kevin
of them
Owens.
Are Canadian.
So
basically.
We embrace our Canadian wrestling fans, and we don't...
We love them.
Yeah, exactly. We don't neglect, we don't reject nobody from Canada. We love Canada.
Yeah, and it's such an honor to have John on the show. And again, like I said, we could have kept talking for hours and hours because you know what? He has a lot to say in all these things.
I mean, great insight on NXT and his thoughts on Brock and Randy Orton. You know, loves Jericho, loves Bobby Roode, loves his Canadian brethren, and he as he should because they're just performing on a top level. But again, thanks to John Canton. You can follow him on Twitter at The John Report. Also follow him on his website, tgrwrestling.net. Also, too, you can follow him on Raja.com, where we found him. And also,
get his t-shirt, guys.
And exactly. You know you're somebody when you have your own t-shirt on ProWrestlingTees.com. So definitely go check that out on the John Report. And also, too, you can follow him. Let me see. Oh, he's got his own podcast, yes. TGR Wrestling Podcast, too. So this guy has a lot
hopefully
of hats.
One day we'll be on that.
I know. We should. John, just letting you know. You know,
no,
we,
we're sending our own invitation right now.
I think we should hijack his show, like the Brooklyn Fans hijacked a little bit of the Finn Balor and Seth Rollins match.
Yes, they did. But again, you know, you and I can go back and forth on this all we want. But again, what a weekend. What a great close to it. And couldn't have ended it more on with having John Kenton on to talk about it, too.
And, of course, I also want to wish Vince McMahon a happy birthday, too. Listen, man, we put a lot of money into your wallets this weekend. So also want to wish a happy birthday. And, you know, just... Man, 71 is still going, and you know, no stopping in sight too.
No, it's very inspirational from not only the intensity he does in his workouts, but the intensity he does every day. He does the one typical thing that we spoke with John about as well. Want to squeeze everything out of life. So if all three of us combined can equivalent one day of Vince McMahon and what he does, just imagine if we really, you know, look at him and geez, this guy never stops. He's a machine, and that's inspirational to us. And a happy birthday to Vince McMahon. Definitely deserves it. He's basically what caused us to love this the sport in the WWE as well, and I call it a sport. But other than that, you guys have been listening and enjoying yourselves the High Spot Podcast, and you can catch us on Twitter as well at High Spot Podcast, as well as Brain Stew Radio Network, our partnership with them. Shout out to Chris Hamelboy. Love
you, Hamel, we love you, man.
Representing. Also catch it on Twitter at Brain Stew Radio as well, and for my tag team partner and one member of the Jersey Wrecking Crew that took over Brooklyn, New York for three straight days.
I was all
days.
Over it, man.
We were everywhere.
Drink in the Jersey Wrecking Crew, man.
Exactly.
Drink it in. And we'd also like to say next week we have a great episode for you. Next week, Cheat Day. What is Cheat Day, Brian? Cheat Day is a great YouTube show about a couple, Eddie and Jada, who are going to be on the show next week, and they basically go around Staten Island or any place in Jersey, anywhere in New York, where they feel has good eats and gives you a chance to get their reviews on it. And we're very happy to be joined by, I think, is going to be a very successful show in the future. Cheat Day, Eddie and Jada will be here next week. Looking forward to that.
Yes, I can't wait, and I'm sure you guys can't wait either. So you've been listening to the High Spot Podcast, and after you finish listening to us, you know that life is just too sweet.